Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. We're Series 6, Episode 4, an unplanned episode. We're recording about 10 minutes after Manchester United have suffered their worst defeat for many years, 9 years. And it's a sense of dejection. But welcome to the podcast, to Series 6, Episode 4, with me, Harry Robinson, and Jack Tate. We're talking about a terrible defeat to Tottenham Hotspur at Old Trafford. And there was, I was thinking about this at half time, and there was a great sense of anger inside me. And I think that would be the same for United fans all over the world who had seen their team perform so woefully with so little effort and quality, so many mistakes, and an inexplicable refereeing decision to compound matters and to make things even worse. But another 45 minutes, another two goals, and it really is a sense of dejection, Jack. And there's that anger is still simmering, and I'm sure it will come out at some point from both of us in this episode. But yeah, I didn't miss the last 10 minutes. I stopped watching for the last 10 minutes of the game as soon as that penalty was given. The sixth mistake that led to a goal, but probably the 20th or 25th mistake of the game. It's a hard one to know what to say at the start. There's plenty to break down, but yeah, really just dejection now.
Normally, we always make a point of not recording straight after a bad performance because we don't just want to have an episode of us kind of just shouting frustrations into the microphone over and over again, because it's just not very fruitful.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't think there's anything else that should be done at the moment. I'm trying really hard to kind of keep my emotions in check, but I mean, what we've just watched is not... unacceptable doesn't even cover it.
Yeah.
Every bad word that you could imagine, it was just a disgraceful performance. I've never seen, even to me, obviously, the thing that rubs salt in the wounds here is that not only did we get smashed, but we got smashed 6-1, which is obviously a very loaded scoreline for United fans. And actually, I think this performance was worse than the City 6-1. Because at City, at least, you know, we were somewhat in the game towards the end, and they scored 3 goals to finish us off in the last 10 minutes. We were, with 10 or 11 men, awful. Absolutely awful all day. I mean, some of the defensive mistakes that we made wouldn't be acceptable in a Sunday league team where all 11 players are hungover after a big Saturday night out.
Yeah.
I mean, that it is genuinely incredible to me that a Premier League team, let alone one that has spent this much money on some of those players, can play that badly.
Yeah. It was, I mean, you can take every goal. I mean, we could. And, the whole just the sheer number of mistakes. There was one point, I think, for the, it was either the fourth or the fifth goal where I found myself on the floor, just kind of in, almost in disbelief at the number of players out of position, the number of mistakes, the number of people covering for others and then leaving their own stations unmarked.
I think it's probably the fourth goal you're thinking of.
Yeah.
When Shaw's out of position because he's covering for Rashford, not tracking back.
Yeah.
Then Maguire's out of position because Shaw is out of position. So Maguire has to go cover the cross.
Yeah.
Then Bailly is supposed to be covering for Maguire at the front post, but never gets across there. So there's about 15 yards of completely open space between Maguire on the edge of the box and Bailly in the middle of the goal.
Yeah.
And Son just waltzes into that space at the front post and pokes it home.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, Son's finishes, both of them were typically good from him.
Yeah.
And yet we've lost the game 6-1, and those finishes were great. And there's no doubt about that. But I do feel like we've lost the game 6-1 and every single goal was avoidable. And that's, I mean, you come here and we think, who do we blame for this? And it's another one of those. And how many times have we said this over the last 5 years? That you can pick out anyone you like and blame them, but it's delusional to think that there is one person to blame. Moyes has failed, Van Gaal has failed, Mourinho has failed, Solskjaer is, it's what
on the verge of failing, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. And you can say Pogba has failed, but so too have Rooney, Van Persie, Schweinsteiger, Falcao, Di Maria. The number of players that have come to Manchester United and underperformed, the number of managers that have come to Manchester United and not done well enough, and the number of summers and winters in which we have had the frustration that we have at the running of the club. And it's particularly sad and dejecting because you know that if fans had been at this game, I think the result could have been different. But B, I would feel like I had some kind of power in which to voice my frustration. And I think that's the same for me. It would be being at the game myself. And being able to do that myself. For people who can't go to games every week, it would be knowing that there were at least 75,000 people representing them who could offer that frustration.
Exactly. The fans in the stadium act as sort of representatives of the masses of United fans around the world. And seeing Ed Woodward sat in the director's box today alone with no one around, no one there to give him what he deserves. It sickens me just to think that he's potentially getting away with all of this.
Yeah. And it's a real sense of sadness because there have been three or four moments in time where you've thought Solskjaer has worked this out and has cracked it. And he was obviously helped by very good individual performances and purple patches from Fernandes, Pogba, Rashford, Martial, Greenwood at various points. And all the upward momentum that existed, say, at the end of June, mid-July. And I think that kind of carried on towards the end of the season when United did finish third. It probably dissipated a little, but there was certainly a positivity at the end of the season. Now, the Europa League performance dampened that once more, but still, had signings been made, then I think United would be going in with some serious momentum into the new season. And as it happens, that's not the case at all.
And some momentum and some goodwill for Solskjaer. You know, by the end of the season, he had built up a large amount of goodwill among the fans, and rightly so. He led us to, without a doubt, our best spell of football, I think.
Yeah.
Probably, definitely under his tenure, if not under anyone's tenure since 2013.
Yeah.
You know, the level of football we were playing after lockdown, and even for the few weeks before that as well, was genuinely very high.
Mm.
And all of that has now dissipated. I think he's both him and you know the players and the club as a whole have run through that goodwill, and I don't think it exists from the fans anymore, and rightly so.
Yeah.
The thing for me, I was thinking about this during the game, towards the end of the first half. Harry, I'll ask you this question. When do you think the last time we actually played well was?
I was also trying to think this. And I meant to have a look at the results and remind myself of when certain games were, but it must have been mid July. I tell you what, the turning point for me was, and this was, we played well after this, but was the FA Cup quarterfinal against Norwich, which was a really poor performance, and that we won.
Yep.
And I know there were some good games after that, but that was the point. I think it was the point where it became obvious that Bruno Fernandes was no longer playing quite as well. And so I'd say probably a couple of weeks after that, 2 or 3 weeks after that, is probably, because the Europa League, all the games were poor. The Chelsea Cup semi-final was terrible. The end of season wins against Leicester and whatever were, I mean, we won, great, but we didn't play well, as I think is the point you're making.
I think to me, there's a clear... I think you're right, Norwich was a turning point in that. I think Norwich was the moment when we should have rested players and didn't.
Yeah.
And still didn't get the win that we needed, at least not in normal time. I think the turning point for me in performances, and I feel like this game for some reason angered me more than it maybe should have at the time, it was the draw against Southampton. We were awful in that game. Awful. Mm. And we deserved probably less than a draw, to be honest. But it was the game before that that I think is the last time we put in a genuinely good performance, and that was a 3-0 win against Villa. And even in that game, we got quite lucky because Villa, I'm pretty sure, hit the post before we went ahead. That wasn't a perfect performance either. That was July the 9th.
Yeah.
How many games have we played since? It's got to be about 10 games we've played since then. And I genuinely don't think we've played well in any single one of them. That is disgraceful. And it's not... That's why this performance, sure, this performance is the worst of the lot. And, you know, 6-1 is a scoreline that's going to stick in our memories for a long time, and we won't forget this in a hurry. But the result might be a surprise, but this performance isn't that much of a surprise. We've now conceded 11 goals in 3 games this season. And it could have been a lot more.
I don't even...
Against Brighton, they woodwork 5 times. We could have lost 6-2 against Brighton.
Well, yeah, that's what I was about to say, is that... this result is, I mean, obviously it was shocking to be 4-1 down at half time. Was it shocking that we've conceded 6 goals?
Honestly, not
as shocking as it should be. And Brighton, we could have conceded 6 against Brighton, the crossbar 5 times.
And even Palace, they had a few more chances than just their 3 goals too.
Yeah. And right. I think let's move the conversation on to run through some things. Firstly, individual mistakes. I don't want to go through goal by goal because everyone can, I'm not sure I want to put myself through that again, to be honest. First, individual mistakes, shambolic. But also the lack of response in the second half was I think what turned it from anger into just a sheer sadness. And you just thought, and it, particularly because I think we've all warmed to most of this United side over the last year or so. And that was one of the big achievements of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, was to bring the fans back on the players' side. And we were warming to everyone in the team. And I don't think that's changed, but I remember about 65 minutes, Scott McTominay went in for a hard 50-50 and you thought, where the fuck has that been for 65 minutes?
Yeah.
I don't think we won a single kind of clash in the first half, whether it was aerially, a 50-50, Pogba was far too soft in them. So was Nemanja Matic, so was Wan-Bissaka, so was Shaw. And the positioning was terrible. And this is the thing, and what we really need to move on to is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I think it's become obvious that if he is going to last as Manchester United manager, he needs someone to coach his defenders for him, because he clearly can't do it. And I think there is a some missing qualities in that defence, but it's still far from the level that it's playing at. Maguire should not be part of the... he is a good defender. Eric Bailly is a perfectly good defender. Shaw is a perfectly good defender. Wan-Bissaka is a good defender. Now, they've all got a lot of weaknesses, and they all kind of... The big problem is that every single one of them, every single defender in United's team has something which they need a teammate to cover them for.
Yeah,
and that's exactly. Completely unsustainable. But the coaching, I mean, there's no evidence of it. There's no evidence of a good system or coaching or improvement. And that's damning, I think.
You're very right in that every member of the United defence has a weakness that someone else needs to cover, which is a problem in and of itself, which is where this whole debate comes from, you know, which we've talked about so much of. It can both be true that the players are not good enough for us to be winning a title or to be a serious challenger for multiple trophies. But at the same time, these players can all play better than what they are. And if players have weaknesses, it's not rocket science that the role of a coach and of a coaching staff is to minimise those weaknesses. And that is not happening at the moment. I don't see any attempt to, say, help Maguire deal with the fact that he's not particularly fast and can't really play a high line. Because what do we do in every single game? We play a high line.
Yeah.
I don't see any...
We got destroyed, not just because of individual mistakes, but because of the tactics.
Yeah.
And... I think we're going to have to talk about the red card, and as much as I don't want to, because it probably angered me more than it's impossible to put it. I guess we're talking about it now. VAR was specifically brought in order to stop players from cheating the system and getting other people punished for things that weren't violent, weren't a foul, to stop diving, all of this. And it has failed so catastrophically there and inexplicably. And you got to half time and I was furious with the performance of United, but also just completely dumbfounded by that decision. And I can't. It's not like I can see a way in which that decision was made. I just cannot understand the thought process behind that being a red card. It should just be a kind of a brief telling off and then get on with the corner. And B, the fact that Lamella has avoided all sense of justice there by falling to the floor a second after he was lightly stroked across the cheek.
The thing that really got me is that, considering that, you know, TV analysts, commentators and stuff normally love making an entire football game about some referee indecisions.
Yeah.
Lamella's part in that was, at least I was watching it on NBC here in the States, they did not even discuss Lamella's role in that. There was nothing to be said about, you know, him falling down maybe a full 3 seconds after he's actually touched, or about the fact that he's pushed his elbow into Martial's neck. If what Martial has done is a red card...
Yeah.
On what planet is what Lamella has done not? I don't understand.
That's it.
And yet it wasn't even discussed. It wasn't even brought up that this is potentially something that could have been punished.
Yeah. And it's for such a big decision. Now, Spurs were running riot against us already and could have been fallen out before the red card.
I think we have every right to be frustrated about the red card. And again, you can both be frustrated about the red card, but also know that we probably wouldn't have won that game either way.
Yeah, but for such a game change or potentially game changing decision, for the referee not to go and look at it on the side of the pitch is baffling. And I assume what happened is that the ref saw Martial's action and said to the video assistant referee after it had happened, "I think that's a red card for Martial. Am I wrong?" And within the laws of the game, raising hands to the face is punished far more greatly than kind of any other offence. And I assume because there's something within the VAR rules that says that the VAR can't tell the referee to send off a player and they can't they can point something out, but then they should say to the ref, go and watch it yourself. I assume there was some kind of technicality within the laws where they couldn't directly say to the ref, you need to check Lamella's involvement in that situation. And that's why he didn't go to see it. But it's...
Or probably that he just saw on the replay Martial's hand touch Lamella's face, which automatically now is a red card, which isn't... I don't necessarily have a problem with, but then how is what Lamella did not one as well? You know, it's just...
Yeah.
I think VAR is so frustrating because it genuinely did have the potential to be a massive game changer for referee indecision and get rid of this and make football a better spectator sport, because this kind of play acting is awful to watch. It ruins so many good games. Yeah. And if, in effect, VAR instead has just been reduced to, was a player running when a ball happened to strike their hand?
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on from VAR, because there's obviously more important things to discuss, even though that was absolutely farcical.
To be fair, maybe we shouldn't be so critical of VAR, because thanks to VAR, we actually have one win this season.
Very true. Although it does feel like every week, and I said this when it happened, it feels like every week there is some kind of farce involving us. And look, we eventually benefited against Brighton, but there were mistakes made by VAR in that game. The Lindelof penalty against Palace was... there was another one today, actually.
It's not just every week. It's almost every game, to be honest, at this point.
Another one where Luke Shaw was a yard outside the penalty area and the ball was hit at him from a yard away and his hand was in front of his chest and it was given as a handball and a free kick. And I thought, so if that was a yard in...
If it's going to hit his chest anyway, what's the point? Like, why does it matter?
That really riled me as well. And that was... It's like, they have to change that rule. But anyway, we've spoken about this. Let's talk about Solskjaer more. And the reality is now, this is what we I think we've always said, is that if Solskjaer, when we've talked about the possibility United winning the league, we've always said Solskjaer will only win the title for Manchester United if he has by far the best squad in the league. And that remains true. I think what we're seeing is that even if United did have the best squad, perhaps Solskjaer's level of coaching wouldn't be great enough to do that. And I think we've always kind of admitted that's a possibility, and his responsibility is in the poor tactics, the poor shape, the complete lack of defensive positioning, even though individual players could improve on that. And it's clear that United need a coach who can do the defensive side of things if Solskjaer is going to stay. And if that continues, or if this continues without any changes, then it does seem like he won't be United manager for that long. But for the owners and for Ed Woodward, he's the perfect man, unfortunately. And it really saddens me to say that, because he's trying to do what's right for himself and for Manchester United. And it might end up making things worse for both parties.
Yeah. As much as I hate to say this, you almost need a Jose Mourinho type character at these moments, because he's going to make things toxic and he's going to make things frustrating, and he's going to say things that you don't like and that seem to run against sort of the DNA of the club. I think what he does is he makes people take action because he brings things to light. And I don't think, out of his respect for the club, which is extremely admirable, I don't think that Solskjaer would ever come out and say, look at the squad I have, look at what's happened in the transfer market, look at what's happening upstairs. I don't think he would do it, which is a credit to him, but there comes a point when there are certain moments when just accepting the status quo isn't acceptable anymore. Not that I think Solskjaer is accepting it internally. Yeah. I don't think Solskjaer is, you know, just sitting there saying, yeah, I'm fine with this squad. I think he is doing everything he can internally. I don't think that he's willing to come out and criticise the club. And I think at this moment, that's what's needed. Having said that, though, I am probably... I think this is true. I'm probably less convinced now than I have been at any point in Solskjaer's tenure that he is the man to take us forward, I think. And that's a big statement. And that might be an emotionally having a bit of an emotional reaction to the game. And I'll see how, you know, see next week if I still say that. But if we are quite clearly not going to be going into a season with a good enough squad, which it, you know, as barring something ridiculous happening in the next 24 hours, it looks like we are. I don't see this season going anywhere other than south. I genuinely would be at this point very surprised if we finish higher than seventh. We, so far this season, we don't even look like a top half team.
Yeah, I agree. On the other hand, I do think that you take a look at the last five seasons and one of these periods, obviously this is the worst defeat, but one of these periods has basically happened every year for 7 years.
Yeah, that's fair.
And yet United have finished second, third, and various other positions within the top four. United don't look like a top four team. They don't look like a top eight team. But there is every chance that out of the international break, they could go on a winning run and very quickly leave these concerns behind, only for it to happen again, sure. But it's still possible. I can tell you what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, because he's just spoken as we're recording this, and he said, "I'm responsible. I hold my hands up. I promise we will do everything to turn this around," which is, and it hurts. This is embarrassing. It's pretty typical Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, isn't it? And he might have said something else as well, but not everything's come out so far. Look, I'm less confident than ever that Solskjaer can win a trophy at United. On the other hand, this is the sense of powerlessness is depressing, because you look at it and think it feels like we've tried almost everything. There's so many areas at the top of the club that can improve, but in terms of managerially and players, it feels like we've tried it all. We've had successful coaches, we've had inexperienced coaches, we've had reliable coaches in David Moyes, we've had Van Gaal experienced, Mourinho experienced winner, Solskjaer less experienced.
We've had pragmatic coaches, we've had ideological coaches, we've had it all.
And perhaps Pochettino could come in and do a better job, but I've said this many times, I cannot see us doing well while the club is run by the people it's done. And and that's the sad truth of it.
Changing a manager is all well and good. And maybe that should happen, maybe it shouldn't. I honestly don't know. But it's not going to change. It's not going to change. It might immediately give us a boost. We might end up finishing higher this season. You know, we might finish fourth instead of seventh, or, you know, wherever.
Yeah.
It's not going to change anything that big. The issues at Manchester United are more than skin deep. There is systemic issues in this football club. And I said this a couple of months ago, I think, and I've been thinking it for a few months now, that I am seriously worried that we are about to enter into a period that Liverpool have been in since the early 90s, that they're sort of just come out of now, where we are a fallen giant, perpetually stuck trying to figure out how to get back to the heights that we once had. And what ended up doing it for Liverpool was a change in regime with Ken Edwards and Jurgen Klopp. And it was, Jurgen Klopp has pushed this a lot, but let's not forget that Liverpool also had new ownership about 10 years ago, which has got some flack from the fans, but has always, I think, done a good job of staying committed to the club and backing whoever's in charge. They have a director of football in Duncan Edwards, who has done brilliant things in the transfer market. They've had clear plans going forward, but it took 20 years for that to happen. And I hate to say this, but I am seriously worried that it might take us 20 years to get back.
Yeah. I think basically, I mean, we've said all these things before, and I don't want to do it all over again, but ultimately, if United had a better manager, or let's say a better coach than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, perhaps we wouldn't have to clamour for new signings in the way that we do. It's blatantly obvious that we need new signings to make something of this season. Had we had a better manager, perhaps it wouldn't be quite so necessary. So there is a very good squad at United, or at least a selection of very good players, and Solskjaer isn't doing enough with it.
100%. All you have to look at is our form after lockdown to prove
that. And Solskjaer isn't doing enough with what he's got. It's an expensive team. He has made some signings. Yes, not enough. He hasn't been backed fully. Yes, but and that's a massive failing of the board. But we've been through that. We've been through the frustration at the board, and we all know it. We don't need to reiterate it every single week and for the whole episode every single week. Solskjaer's not doing enough. But again, it comes down to what I've just said, the criticism of the board, and I don't think it will change. And look, you can wonder what a better coach would do, but it is to do with the board. And it's a difficult one to analyse. And look, I've got every confidence that United will come out of the international break and react to this embarrassing defeat, the worst day of probably every player in that squad's career, Solskjaer's worst day as a manager at any club. Everyone involved in that United squad and coaching staff will feel this is the worst day of their career, and they absolutely should. It's the worst performance I've ever seen from a Manchester United team, and I think I can safely say that. And
is this or 4-0 against Everton?
Perhaps, yeah. Yeah, both were. But yeah, perhaps Everton was even more heartless than this was. But I've got every confidence that we'll come out and the players will have some kind of reaction to this. It's a shame almost that the international break is now. Perhaps it will be a benefit as well. How much more is there to say?
There isn't much, mate, to be honest. Just almost just disbelief that we could put in a performance that bad. And I think, honestly, just fear for the rest of the season. If you go back to when we got knocked out of the Europa League semi-finals, I was very, very excited for this season and optimistic that something good might actually be building. As the days went by in the summer, I got less and less optimistic. And at this point, it's going to be a tough old slog watching us the next 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'll go to a youth loan and women's roundup to end the show in just a second. But to end this segment, I think I'll read this Ole Gunnar Solskjaer quote on Eric Lamela, which has, I think, mildly cheered me up very slightly. He said on Lamela's kind of dive for the Martial red card, Solskjaer said, "It's a joke. If that was my son, he would be eating bread and water for 2 weeks." And it was farcical, but so were many, many, many things in that defeat. It was terrible defending, terrible managing, terrible refereeing. And there's not much more to say. We'll go
actually,
to
the other thing I do quickly want to bring up was having a little bit distance from the game now. Just I feel like the Spurs' first goal today may end up being a clip that we watch as just being like the ultimate low point of this Manchester United era. I mean,
it was
just watching that. So I think just to run through the sequence of events. So the ball pops up in the air.
I can't.
Maguire heads it against Eric Bailly, who then heads it pretty much straight up in the air. Maguire then, I actually don't understand how it's possible to get such little power on a header as he did when he tried to head it back to De Gea. Then pretty much ends up in his desire to make up for his mistake. Maguire fouling Shaw, pretty much, like pulling him down to the ground. When I watched it in real time, I thought it might get disallowed for a foul on Shaw because he was getting dragged to the floor as he was trying to clear it. Then you realise, no, it's the Manchester United captain that's dragging our left back to the floor. I mean, it's a comical series of events that I think we will end up looking back on as such a microcosm of everything wrong with this football club at the moment.
Yeah, I think I need a little more time before I can laugh about it, but perhaps one day I will. I was furious.
I think if we'd have lost the game by one or two goals, I wouldn't be able to laugh about anything. I think almost the fact that we lost by such a wide margin is I know that one goal didn't actually mean that
much.
Well,
this is the thing is we haven't been able to go through every goal because there were six of them and there were so many mistakes. I mean, you've just gone through that one. There were five mistakes in there.
Yeah.
It should be laughable, really. It's Manchester United captain, £80 million. It was like Boxing Day 2016. United played Stoke under Louis van Gaal, and Memphis Depay headed the ball back to De Gea. And I think it must have been Arnautovic, probably, just stole the ball. Yeah. The weakest header I've ever seen.
There was a great, there's a great screenshot of Sky doing their analysis of that header, where they say, distance to De Gea, 21 yards. Header distance, 3 yards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was like that, but closer in. I think worse. The number of... We're going to have to wrap things up there. We'll go to the Youth Loan and Women's Roundup, and then we'll be back just to say goodbye. Manchester United's under-23s drew 2-2 with Blackburn at the weekend, with a very young team put out by Neil Wood. 16-year-old summer signing Joe Hugel scored a double on his debut to get United's first points of the season. He has now been called up to the England under-18s team. The under-18s, meanwhile, who are also a very young side now, were beaten 2-1 by Manchester City. With the international break coming up, it's a good time to give a summary of the loanees so far and their progress this season. Midfielder James Garner has been impressing for Watford with 3 appearances since he joined them on loan. He hit the crossbar with a lovely free kick in Saturday's game and has been called up for England's under-20 side. Dylan Levitt has played a few times for Charlton Athletic, who sit in the bottom third of the table. Teith Chong has scored 4 goals in 5 starts for Werder Bremen in the Bundesliga and grabbed an assist as well. Joel Pereira is at Huddersfield and is playing about a third of their games. Goalkeeper as well, Matej Kovar, is yet to keep a clean sheet for Swindon Town in 6 games, but has been playing well for them. Max Taylor, the defender, who travelled with United to Kazakhstan last season, he has joined Kidderminster Harriers on a 4-month loan deal. United's women's team returned to action this weekend after a couple of weekends off. 3 goals against Brighton for them, none in return. And those goals came from Ella Toon, Jane Ross and new signing Alessia Russo. Next week, we'll have a special on United's women's team. Patrons will get access to extended interviews with a couple of guests, and there'll be a 5 or 10 minute shortened edition on the normal feed. If you want to get the full episode and much more, including bonus Q&As at the end of our shows, ad-free episodes and many other things, go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. And you'll find information there on how to become a patron, helps support the show in return for exclusive bonus content. Right, no game to preview with the international break coming up. We will have a couple of episodes during the international break. We'll keep you updated on our Twitter about what those are going to be, but there will be we'll do some kind of a special on the women's team and their season so far, their recent signings. We'll have a shortened version on the normal feed, as I've just mentioned, and then a full version on the Patreon. If you want to sign up to the Patreon, go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D for information there. But for more from Jack throughout the international break, you can find him on Twitter at
UTD Tate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64. The episode will continue for our patrons who have signed up, quite a few of them. We do a bonus Q&A at the end of every show for our patrons. We're going to talk about Edison Cavani, who we haven't had time to talk about already, Eric Bai, and various other things to do with the defence, with questions from Craig, Michael and Dave. If you want to join them, ask questions, have them answered in a bonus Q&A at the end, go to our Twitter and find out more information. You can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64, Jack at UTD Tate. I can't say have a great week, because I'm sure this will play on everyone's mind for a week, and it's a shame there's no matches to make up for it. But enjoy the...
Just thank your lucky stars that, like, you probably still aren't working in person and won't get abuse from your mates this week.
Yeah, that's very true. Lining. Avoid everyone you can. Stay solitary all week until...
Just self-isolate.
Yeah, self-isolate. I am actually in isolation, but unfortunately I'm living with 2 United fans, but also with Arsenal, Liverpool and City fans. So I'm sure I'm in for... not such an easy ride during the next 2 weeks of isolation, but there we go. Right, have a great week. Enjoy anything you can. Just try not to think about Manchester United. Goodbye.
Network. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing
The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.